All right, let's jump into another deep dive. Today, we're going to tackle a question that's been puzzling economists, well, forever, really. Why do markets sometimes fail to deliver the goods and services that everybody needs? And, you know, our trusty guide for this exploration is Chapter 11 of an econ textbook. It's all about public goods and common resources.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing here is that this difference, it helps us understand why some things are, like, readily available at a price, you know, like your morning coffee.
Right.
But others, like clean air, those are a lot trickier.
Yeah, exactly. It all boils down to two characteristics, excludability and rivalry. You know, the textbook, it uses the example of a pizza slice to show this.
Oh, yeah.
A private good, got to pay for it to enjoy it. And once you eat it, poof, gone. No one else can have it.
Right. Now, contrast that with a public good like a tornado siren.
Oh, good one.
Yeah, you can't stop anyone from hearing it. And one person's, you know, ability to benefit from the warning doesn't diminish anybody else's.
But here's where it gets kind of interesting. The lines between these categories, they can get blurry.
Over.
So the textbook uses fish in the ocean as an example.
Okay.
Usually they're a common resource anyone can fish, but the more fish one person catches, well, the fewer there are left for everyone else. But imagine, like, a country with a super powerful coast guard.
Whoa.
Yeah, one that could control access to all the fishing grounds.
So those fish would become excludable.
Exactly. It really highlights how the nature of a good can, like, totally shift. Mm-hmm. Depends on, well, things like technology or enforcement.
It's just true. It's true.
Mind-boggling. It really makes you think that these classifications, they're not set in stone.
Mm-hmm.
But for today, let's focus on the instances where markets kind of struggle. Public goods and common resources.
Right.
So the textbook gives a really good example to explain public goods. A small town that wants to, you know, have fireworks for the 4th of July.
Uh-huh. That's a perfect example of the free rider problem.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to see the show, but no private company is going to pay for it if they can't, you know, charge admission.
Right. Why would they? People can just watch from their yards.
Exactly.
It's like a catch-22.
It is. That's where positive externalities come in.
Okay.
You know, putting on the fireworks would benefit the whole town, even those who didn't pay. So the market underprovides the good, you see.
So how do they usually solve that?
Well, the government often steps in, you know, use tax money to pay for the fireworks. It's a classic example of how government fixes market failures and everyone benefits.
Right. Makes sense. But fireworks, that's pretty small scale. What about something bigger like national defense?
Well, national defense, that's like the classic public good example, right?
Yeah.
Can't exclude anyone within the country from being protected.
Right.
And one person's safety doesn't take away from another's. But this raises the question.
Yeah.
How much should a country spend on defense?
Is there an easy answer to that?
No, not really. You know, economists use something called cost-benefit analysis to weigh the, you know, benefits, things like deterrence and stability, against the costs. But measuring those benefits, that's incredibly complex. Like, how do you even put a number on preventing a war?
I guess there's a lot of guesswork then.
There is.
Yep.
It's why defense spending is always, you know, debated. Some people say be cost effective, you know, get the most security bang for your buck.
Yeah.
Others say set a budget limit to prevent overspending.
It's fascinating. You know, something so important is so hard to, like, quantify and budget for.
Absolutely. And it's the same with other public goods, too. Take basic research, for example.
Oh.
Discoveries, like a new math theorem or, you know, a fundamental law of physics. That benefits everyone.
Right. It's like those breakthroughs ripple through so many fields.
Yeah, exactly. But private companies, they're usually more interested in research that makes them money, you know, something they can patent.
Right.
So they might not invest enough in basic research.
So then how do we make sure that vital basic research gets done?
Governments step in again. You know, they fund places like the National Institutes of Health or the National Science Foundation.
Right.
These places focus on fundamental knowledge.
Okay.
But even then, deciding what to fund, that's hard. You can't always tell what's going to lead to the biggest breakthroughs.
I see. It's like there's this constant tension with public goods. We need them, but providing them efficiently is so hard.
You got it. And now we come to the other side of the coin.
Mm.
Common resources.
Yeah.
So public goods are often, you know, underprovided.
Right.
Common resources have the opposite problem. Overuse. The textbook uses this great story about a shared grazing land to show this.
Oh, yeah. The tragedy of the commons, right?
That's the one. Each shepherd, they act rationally, adding more sheep to their flock to increase their profits. But together, all their actions lead to, well, overgrazing. That destroys the pasture and then everyone loses.
It's like a reminder that doing what's best for you individually doesn't always mean the best outcome for everyone. But is this just, you know, a made-up story, or does this happen in real life?
Oh, it happens all the time. Pollution is a good example. If everybody uses the air and water like a garbage dump, we all end up with a trashed environment.
It's like if everybody throws their garbage in the same park, eventually no one can enjoy it.
Exactly. So the textbook, it talks about some solutions.
Oh, good.
Regulations, like emissions limits or those pollution permits, can help. Taxes, like a carbon tax, can make polluting cost more and, you know, encourage people to be cleaner.
So sometimes making a market for pollution is the answer.
It can be, yeah. It sounds weird.
It does.
But if you put a price on pollution, businesses will want to pollute less.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to think about it. Pollution isn't the only example of the tragedy of the commons, right?
Oh, no, not at all.
Yeah.
Think about rush hour. All those cars on the road.
Oh, yeah.
Each driver is being rational, choosing to drive. But together, it causes traffic jams that slow everyone down.
Tolls can help, though, right?
They can, or congestion pricing. But people don't always like those. Even gas taxes can help, in a way.
How so?
Well, they encourage people to drive less or buy cars that are, you know, better on gas.
It's like when you're stuck in traffic, you think, if a few of us had stayed home, we'd all be moving.
I know, right?
Yeah.
That's the whole problem with the commons.
So what about overfishing? Isn't that another classic tragedy of the commons?
Oh, absolutely. If everyone just keeps fishing and fishing without any limits, the fish will disappear. It's really hard to manage, especially in international waters.
Yeah.
Making agreements and enforcing them, it's tough.
It makes you think, are we just going to keep repeating these mistakes?
Not necessarily. The textbook actually talks about this case study that looks at cows and elephants.
Hmm.
So why are cows doing well while elephants are struggling?
Okay, I'm curious.
Well, cows are usually private property. Mm-hmm. Farmers care about protecting them and keeping them healthy in the long run.
Right.
But elephants, they're often seen as a common resource, you know, and that makes them vulnerable to poachers who want to sell their ivory.
So that shows how important property rights are.
Exactly.
About protecting resources.
Exactly. A lot of these problems come from, well, not knowing who owns what. Like if nobody owns the air, who makes sure it stays clean?
Right. And if nobody owns the fish in the ocean, how do you stop overfishing?
Exactly. So making property rights more clear can be a big part of the solution.
But that's got to be complicated.
It is. Sometimes, like with those pollution permits, creating a market works. In other cases, you need rules like hunting seasons or limits on fishing to stop overuse.
And sometimes, like we said before, with the fireworks and national defense, the government just has to take care of it directly.
You got it. The textbook lays out all these different solutions. The best approach really depends on what you're dealing with, you know?
It's amazing how complicated something that seems so simple can be. Who knew economics could be so, I don't know, thought-provoking?
It is, isn't it? Yeah, it really makes you think about all the connections, you know, and how decisions, even small ones, can have big effects.
It makes me think about those debates about government spending.
Right.
We're talking about roads and bridges, scientific research, you know, things that help everyone. It seems pretty clear.
Right.
But how do governments actually decide which public goods are, you know, most important and how much money to spend?
Yeah, that's where it gets tricky. The textbook talks about cost-benefit analysis. Imagine trying to figure out, like, the value of a new highway.
Well, it seems pretty obvious, right? Better transportation, less traffic, it helps the economy.
Yeah, but how do you actually put a dollar amount on that? Especially when everyone can use the highway for free.
Right. You can't charge people based on how much they benefit.
Exactly. You can't send them a bill for the time they save or the, you know, nice views they get along the way.
True, true.
And it gets even more complicated when you think about things like less pollution or fewer accidents. Mm-hmm. Like, what's a cleaner environment worth? How much is a human life worth?
Those are some big questions. It sounds like that kind of analysis can get pretty philosophical.
It can. And the textbook, it mentions another thing.
Yeah.
People aren't always honest about how much they value something.
Okay.
Like if you ask someone if they want a new highway, they might say it's super important to them.
Right.
Just so it gets built.
I guess that's just human nature. We want what's best for ourselves.
Exactly. And that makes it harder for economists to get good data for those cost-benefit analyses.
Yeah.
They got to figure out who's exaggerating and, you know, what the real need is.
It sounds really hard. I'm starting to understand why those government spending decisions are always, well, controversial.
Oh, yeah. There's rarely a clear answer, and you always have to make trade-offs. The textbook, it has this case study about traffic lights and how they relate to the value of a human life.
Okay, I'm listening. How do traffic lights relate to that?
Well, think about it. Every time we put in a traffic light, we're basically saying how much risk we're willing to accept.
Okay.
Traffic lights prevent accidents, but they also, you know, cause delays.
Right, right. Never thought of it that way.
So how do we find the right balance?
Mm-hmm.
How do we know if the lives saved are worth the extra time and hassle?
Yeah, that's a tough one. It's like you're getting at some really, I don't know, deep questions about how we value human life.
Exactly. And the textbook looks at some ways economists try to, you know, deal with this tough issue. One way is to look at dangerous jobs and how much people get paid to do them.
That makes sense. If someone's willing to risk their life for a certain amount of money, it tells you something about how much they value their own safety.
Exactly. It's not perfect.
Right.
But it's a starting point.
It's funny how something like a traffic light can lead to these big questions about risk and value and, you know, what it means to be human.
That's what I love about economics. Yeah. It's not just about numbers. It's about understanding people, making choices when things are scarce, figuring out the trade-offs that shape our world.
This deep dive is really changing how I think about things. It's clear that these decisions about public goods and common resources, they aren't just about, you know, being efficient. They're also about what's right and wrong.
You got it. The textbook finishes up by talking about property rights.
Right.
And how important they are for fixing market failures.
We talked about that earlier with the elephants.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear more. What's the main takeaway there?
Well, one of the big ideas is that when property rights are clear, it encourages people to act in a way that's good for them and for society.
Right.
When people feel like they own something, they take care of it.
Yeah.
And they try to use it in a sustainable way.
It's like you take care of what you own.
Exactly. If you own a house, you're going to fix it up, keep it in good shape. Right.
Right.
It's the same with natural resources.
So how do we do that with things like air and water?
Right. That's the tricky part. The textbook talks about different solutions like government regulations or market-based approaches like those pollution permits.
We talked about those before. How do they actually work?
Basically, the government says, this is the total amount of pollution we'll allow.
Okay.
Then they give out permits that let companies pollute up to a certain amount.
So it's like a market for pollution.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Companies that can pollute less than their limit, they can sell their permits to companies that need to pollute more.
That's pretty clever. It makes it worthwhile for companies to find ways to, you know, pollute less.
That's the idea. And it lets the market decide the best way to reach the overall goal of reducing pollution.
But what about those situations where property rights are, I don't know, just impossible to define?
Right. Well, in those cases, the textbook talks about the government stepping in.
Okay.
That's going to mean things like setting limits for fishing or hunting, creating national parks to protect nature,
yeah,
or funding research to, you know, develop cleaner technology.
It seems like there's no one perfect solution. The best approach depends on, well, what you're trying to manage.
You got it. And a lot of times you need a mix of approaches,
yeah,
using both market tools and government rules and, you know, just raising public awareness.
This has been a really eye-opening deep dive. We've gone from fireworks to traffic lights.
Right.
From overgrazing to pollution permits.
It's all connected.
It's amazing how all these different things are connected by, you know, the basic ideas of economics.
And it all comes back to understanding the difference between public goods and common resources and realizing that when markets fail to deliver, it creates challenges.
But the textbook doesn't just focus on the problems, right?
No.
It also offers solutions, which is, well, hopeful. Like, we can find ways to manage these resources better and create a better future.
That's a key takeaway for sure. We don't have to repeat the same mistakes. If we understand these economic principles and, you know, use them wisely, we can create a world that's good for both individuals and for everyone as a whole.
Yeah, it's really hopeful, you know, seeing how economics can help us understand these complicated issues and find solutions that are good for, well, people and the planet.
Right. It reminds us that economics, it's not just about, you know, boring theories.
Right.
It's about real choices we make, trade-offs, and how those affect our lives and the world around us.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the textbook, it leaves us with this this thought-provoking question.
Okay. I'm all ears. What is it?
Well, we talked about cost-benefit analysis.
Right.
And how it helps governments decide which public goods to, you know, provide and how to like weigh the costs and benefits.
Right. It's about finding that balance, you know, maximizing what's good for society.
Exactly. Yeah. But the textbook, it makes this really deep point.
Okay.
How do we decide how much a human life is worth?
Oh, wow.
It's a question that goes way beyond economics, you know, gets into ethics, philosophy, even spirituality.
It makes you realize these decisions, they aren't just about, you know, numbers. They're about values, priorities, and like what it means to live a good life in a fair society.
Yeah.
This deep dive has been, well, kind of a whirlwind. We started with pizza and fireworks.
Right.
And now we're talking about, you know, the meaning of life.
It's all connected.
It all started with that simple difference between public goods and common resources.
It did.
Who knew economics could be so, well, captivating? It's like we've peeled back the layers of, you know, everyday life and found all these economic forces working behind the scenes.
Absolutely. And, you know, the big takeaway here is this.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding these concepts, it helps us make better choices as individuals and as a society.
So the next time you're at the park, remember, it's a shared resource and we all got to use it wisely.
And if you ever hear people debating, you know, government spending.
Right.
Think about whether the benefits really outweigh the costs. And who's actually benefiting?
This has been an amazing journey.
It has.
And, you know, this is just the start. There's always more to learn and more to question and discuss.
Right.
So keep those brains buzzing, everyone. And we'll see you next time for another deep dive into, you know, the world of knowledge and ideas.